I know we have the flag on the stage. Could we all please rise? The people here on the stage in the back, too. Everybody. Now, will the people in the rear of the room please move to the aisles and come down forward so we fill up these front seats? Come on. Come on. Down in front. Right there. Just a minute.
Well.
Come on. All right, be seated, please.
Gentlemen, be seated.
There is some resistance, isn't there?
We won't call on. We will not call on our latest bishop for the invocation, but we will proceed directly with the program. Now, I wish to present the members of the committee. Dr. Arnold Dean, working from the Agriculture Division, Dr. Norman Gould, Applied Arts, Joy Richardson, Engineering, John Hines, All College, and Dominic Perello, Applied Science, and Art Stobie, also All College. In addition to these people, we had three other individuals who met regularly with the committee and did a great deal of work, Marcus Gold, Murray Smith, and Wallace Reynolds. Also, many others attended the regularly scheduled meetings, which I'm sure were known to all of you, or should have been. And we deeply value the fine spirit of helpfulness shown by all persons who are on the committee and shared in its deliberations during the past year. Now, in retrospect, we should mention that on December 15, 1958, a report dealing with recommendations for educational television was presented to the Executive Council by a committee known as the Audiovisual and Television Policy Committee. Now, this report emphasized types of facilities and equipment feasible for the college. In August of last year, the State College trustees convened a one-week workshop in San Francisco. The meeting included a representative of each instructional staff from each of the state colleges, plus an administrative representative of each college who came for the fifth day. The assembled group examined the policies prepared by Dr. Marvin Laser of Los Angeles State College for his special State College Study Committee on Educational Television, funded by a grant of $25,000 from the Ford Foundation. The results of the San Francisco workshop were presented to each state college faculty. Now, you may remember Dr. Laser appeared here on October 27 last fall, and this report was discussed. On October 16 last year, Dean of our college, Dr. Dale Andrews, appointed the committee here assembled at this table to recommend policies of educational television in the following areas. And we have five, although these are not the only ones. One, phases of development and scope of instructional television on this campus. Two, criteria and standards in selection of televised courses. Three, selection of television teaching staff. Four, resolving problems inter and intra-divisional and departmental associated with instructional television. And the last, faculty orientation workshops and so forth. The College Television Committee has creatively, soundly, and diligently fulfilled its assignment. There was a highly professional atmosphere throughout all our work. Each member has continually freely expressed his point of view on every topic examined. We did not and do not necessarily hold unanimous agreement on all points. There has been a steady enlargement of our understanding and concepts throughout the 10 months of work.
They can't hear back then.
Oh, can't hear? And this is the one copy of the report submitted to Dean Andrews. In order to share with you the evolvement of ideas in our deliberations, we have chosen to examine the following areas this morning. And I will not read these because I believe each of you have a copy listing the topics and with the name of the speaker, a member of this committee. Our procedure then for the next 55 minutes will be approximately this. We will have 5-minute presentations by each of the panel members, each of the committee members on the topic listed. There'll be a very, very short summary. Following this period, we then welcome your either written or oral questions. We have listed a space to write a question. If you so choose, we would welcome this, and these will be brought forward, and you may direct the question to a specific committee member or to the committee as a whole. With this brief introduction then, we'll move right into the topics of the morning, somewhat in order of developmental sequence, but each carrying its own content and information to you. The first then will be, what are the uses of educational television and instructional television? John Hines.
Thank you, Dr. Schroeder. There's an old saying that to catch a bear, you first have to know where he is. And I suppose in like manner, before you can identify the use of television, you have to know what it is. Now, our television bear comes in assorted shapes, sizes, and it's perceived quite differently by various people. To some, television is a monster, turned loose in their homes, that devours their children and enslaves their wives, or worse perhaps, seduces their wives into complying with the entreaties of actors selling the sponsors' products. To others, television's a nice, big, friendly, simple-minded companion that helps them while they're lonely and in trouble. And still others are aware of television only as something of an alien cultural class which they know about through an occasional article in the Saturday Review. These are the ones who say television is all right in its place, but I wouldn't want it in my home. So, when there's the juxtaposition of the two words education and television, some recoil with a horror tantamount to suggesting a striptease in church. Well, let's see if we can skin this television bear and find out what's really under this thick fur of illusion, prejudice, and misconception. When you get right down to the bare bones, you find that all television does is to carry information or messages. It carries messages from a source to receivers. These receivers can be infinitely multiplied without altering or affecting the source. Television moves messages in one direction, from the source to the receivers. Television can't entertain, it can't teach, it can't motivate action. It is amoral. It is neither good nor bad. But it is the message that's carried by television that entertain, inform, compel action, or are good or bad. So this is to get a lot of the things off of television's back that are blamed on. Now, let's define educational television. This is getting more specific here. This is any use of television where the primary intent of the messages carried is to inform rather than to entertain. It's a matter of intent. By this definition, educational television includes informational programs on commercial broadcast stations such as 20th Century, Meet the Press, Probe, and other newscasts. Educational television stations, all their programs are considered educational, whether they inform or entertain. That is, just because a person's entertained doesn't mean he's not also being informed. And educational television also includes instructional television, where the intent of the message is to teach. Now, instructional television may best be defined as any use of television associated with the presentation of formal, organized, sequential lesson units. This includes direct teaching over television, either broadcast throughout the country as is Continental Classroom, which incidentally is now being carried on Channel 6. It began this week with physics on at 6 a.m. and American government on at 6:30, for those of you day people who like to get up in the mornings. Night people like me are getting up a petition to have Continental Classroom rerun following the Late Late Show. Well, instructional television also includes direct teaching carried from one classroom to others in the same building. Instructional television includes the uses of television supplementing regular live class teaching, and also television used as a teaching tool within the classroom for such things as looking down a microscope or giving a close-up view of a demonstration. Now, with educational and instructional television defined, let's take a quick look at a few of their uses. Educational television programs carried by such stations as KQED in San Francisco have the intent of enriching and developing the lives of their viewers. They include concerts, operas, quality drama, forums, lectures, demonstrations, documentaries, special events, and formal courses or lessons. Instructional television is an effective means of distributing messages within courses of instruction, and it can do such things as convey personality. It's amazing how there's a real eye contact between a close-up of someone on television and the audience. It can provide efficient quality instruction by making possible the time, staff, and resources to ensure a superior presentation. It can focus attention on significant aspects of presentation. It can make superior use of all audiovisual materials. And it can motivate later action and stimulate long-term interest by providing a rich exposure to a broader field of experiences and relationships. And I guess I better quit here because my time's up.
Very good, John, and thank you very much. Now, moving to the next topic, what is the difference between television as a teaching tool and television as a system of instruction? Joy Richardson.
The committee found early in its study that we had to set up two major areas so that we could keep our thinking straight as far as the applications that might arise on this campus. And therefore, I'll attempt to outline these two areas, which we have chosen to frequently refer to as TVTT and ITVS. This would be item 3 on your orange sheet there, so if you wish to make any notations on these, go right ahead. The first one, where you have the teaching tool idea in mind, we think of as a small, portable, closed-circuit television system, which may be mounted in a classroom or moved from one location to another to serve as an image magnifier, or as a distance bridge, if you will, or as an instantaneous visual information relay. These are not complicated in scope nor in idea. Perhaps you might compare them to the film projector, which we're so familiar with in our classrooms. On this campus, we have, of course, great emphasis on science, technology, and since these are so vitally important here, the use of television for image magnification and remote observation seems to be very applicable. In demonstrations where visual observation is critical, students may learn much more easily when they see the image clearly for themselves. The television provides every student a chance to get a close-up view. It lets him see small or remote objects equally well with the man who formerly was in the front row while he was behind. The opportunity to learn then is not determined by the student's place in the seating chart, his height, or his aggressiveness. Front row people. Television used for image magnification and observation lets a student whose name begins with Z see just as well as one whose name begins with A. A short student can see just as well as a tall one. And a retiring student who is likely to remain at the rear of the room, say in a laboratory group, can be just as close to the object of attention as an aggressive student. This opportunity for direct observational experience, I'm sure you will admit, is very important to our Cal Poly philosophy. Now, John has mentioned some of the points of application where the television teaching tool may be used. I will list a few more, and I'm sure as I read these, your own imaginations and your ingenuity will call to mind further places where they could be used in your own teaching and your own classroom or laboratory work. First, magnifying images for science demonstrations and group study of detail in a laboratory. One of the most eye-opening demonstrations that I witnessed was at the Santa Barbara campus of UC, where we watched a biological demonstration of live paramecium swimming across a screen, and everyone in the room could see these equally as well as a man whose eye was at the microscope. This was quite effective. Televising remote, obscure, or dangerous equipment, as in showing the detail of machine operation, or perhaps radioactive materials. Helping the class concentrate on specific function, procedure, process, or subject through the use of close-up or zoom lens techniques. You might think perhaps of budding or grafting demonstrations in the OH department, where the object at hand is really quite small, but everyone should get a good look. Helping students to learn the use of card files, indexes, reference materials, and bibliographic tools in the library. Observing specialized animal operations, performance of specialized crop, soil, and fruit skills, and I mentioned one of these. Televising food preparation techniques from the cafeteria and food processing buildings to the home ec classes. Observing between rooms as in a counseling or teaching situation. Showing closed and open sections in a number of locations on campus during registration. And the last one we have listed is administering and proctoring examinations. I'm sure your own mind will add many items to this list where TV as a teaching tool could be applied with effectiveness. Now, the television as an instructional system is a different idea. It's a system where lectures and demonstrations are presented on television for large multiple section courses, supplemented by smaller laboratory and discussion sections. This involves a studio operation where you have as we have often called him, a master teacher who is responsible for the organization and presentation of the subject material. He may reach many sections simultaneously in this way. And as John pointed out, this can be compounded infinitely to reach larger and larger numbers as the need arises. My time is nearly up. If there are other questions in this respect, perhaps we can ask for them as you write them in.
Thank you very much, Joy. The next topic, what is the nation and California doing in the area of instructional television? Dr. Arnold Dean.
Thank you, Dr. I have been charged with giving some background information in terms of instructional television in the United States and the position of television in the United States and California as of today. The earliest experimentation in this area was about 1932 in several Middle Western universities. Some work was done later in 1936 in New York. However, World War II intervened, and it was not until the late 40s and early 50s that attention was redirected to this area in education in the United States. In 1950, Iowa State University at Ames received the first license for a television station at a high institution of higher learning. Iowa State itself and Western Reserve University and New York University began the pioneering in the production of college courses for credit on television. At the same time, in Washington County, in Maryland, the so-called Hagerstown Project, in closed-circuit television this is, was initiated, which was interested in the application of television in the elementary and in the public schools. Quite a bit of the work that appears now in the United States stems from some of the experiences that have been, or some of the developments that they have made in this particular area in Hagerstown. We have a situation in California that we have seen that is of this type, which I will say something about a little later. In 1957, NBC started their programs in open circuit television, the first being a program for children. As Mr. Hines has mentioned, Continental Classroom is being produced and is being given in California, two University of California professors being involved in two of the courses that are being offered. CBS also has their program in this area, and one of their programs is going to be offered in California also, which I will say something about a little later. By 1960, 47 of the 267 channels that had been reserved by the federal government for television, instructional television, had been activated. There were 569 school districts in the United States that were making direct use of television in their instructional programs. 117 colleges and universities were offering TV courses for credit, and 144 educational institutions were making use of this closed circuit image magnification type of thing that Mr. Richardson spoke about. A startling and interesting development in this area is Midwest Airborne, which some of you may have heard about. This started in the fall of 1961 and will proceed again this year. This is a Middle Western development, which comes by way of Westinghouse, in which they will be broadcasting from 23,000 feet above Purdue University by plane. The target area is a 400-mile diameter area encompassing some of the Middle Western states, Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Ohio. There are approximately 5 million students that are involved in this program in 20,000 schools and colleges. They project this year 24 half-hour programs daily being given over this system, carrying right through in different areas from elementary to college level. Of course, this is a rather a extreme development in terms of what we're talking about at Cal Poly. However, it gives you an idea as to the type of thing that apparently is going on as far as television. Now, as far as San Luis Obispo and Cal Poly is concerned, directly influencing us was the 1956 State College Committee on Instructional Television, which was set up in California. This had representatives, two representatives from each state college, plus representatives of the State Department of Education. Quite a bit of the decision made by this group was the result and based on findings from two programs that had been carried out of an experimental nature at San Francisco State and at San Jose State. The results of their work were that in 1959 and 60, they made a budget request for further activity in this area at some of the state colleges, not including San Luis Obispo campus. In 1960, as Dr. Schroeder has already said, the state college trustees study in instructional television was drawn up, and as a result, the Laser Report, and as a direct result, this committee, which you see sitting in front of you. At the time of the Laser Report, it's interesting to note that Cal Poly campus San Luis Obispo was one of really the only, I guess, of the state colleges that was active at that time that had no provision and nothing doing in this particular area. In California, in the state college system, there are being offered courses on open circuit for credit and non-credit. These courses are either being given on free time over commercial stations or actually purchased time. Los Angeles State, for instance, uses purchased time on a station in that area. There's also closed circuit television going on for credit. They're also using demonstration systems of the image magnification type and so on in certain science, health, and so on classes in the colleges. They're using this to some extent in closed circuit observation and teacher education programs. And also there's quite a bit of the public information type of program which is being given from colleges to acquaint the area and to acquaint the state and so on with their operation. Also some expansion in curricular offerings in broadcasting itself at some of the state colleges. Some utilization is made at the University of California, and Berkeley campus is offering 23 courses at this time in certain areas in this. Berkeley is cooperating with Continental Classroom, and Berkeley is also cooperating with the CBS television operation. Some of the state colleges are also cooperating in that area. The other campuses of the university are making some use, however. They're of a similar type as being used at University of California. For instance, the Davis campus is using this in their veterinary medicine school. A variety of operations were viewed by this committee in California this spring. A very interesting one is this Anaheim program, the Anaheim Center for Television, the Anaheim Television Center for Elementary Education. This is related to the Hagerstown Project. At that institution, we saw 11 teachers and 9 professional staff or technicians, 8 of whom were also teachers before they took up this technician aspect, teaching arithmetic, music, science, social studies, and Spanish via closed circuit to 7,800 third through sixth grade students in 20 schools in the Anaheim School District. This is a most interesting operation, and I would think that anybody who ever has a chance to go to Anaheim and see this in operation, it would be well worth your while. The teachers are carefully auditioned and chosen, carefully trained. They use a wide variety of resource materials. The technical personnel are highly competent, a great deal of cooperation going on, and they really put on a most interesting and apparently successful program of instruction in this school system. Of course, this is not cheap. In 3 years, they have expended for materiel about $850,000, and their operating budget this past year was $180,000. However, we saw what could be done. On the other hand, I might compare that possibly with an operation we saw at Los Angeles State. 18 classrooms equipped to receive TV with seating capacities ranging from 30 to 200 students. This is a much smaller operation in terms of maybe $50,000 in equipment, not including maintenance. They're teaching English literature, art appreciation, health and safety. These are all tape programs. They're using some open circuit and some closed circuit. For myself, and I guess I'm speaking for myself, this was not a particularly inspiring program. At UCLA, use is being made of overhead TV. Some of you may have seen this is strictly image magnification. UCLA is interested in bringing all areas of, all areas of instructional communication, if you want, into one department. They're going a little bit beyond. However, as far as teaching open circuit and so on, they apparently are not doing that. USC, we saw an operation there where they're using television as a course. They are actually teaching operation and teaching in television. We saw an evening class where the students prepare, produce, direct, and so on their own programs and are getting some idea and will apparently go out into the field in this particular area. Now this is a rather hasty sketch as to what is going on. However, I think it might give you some idea that There is considerable activity in this area, and it would appear from what we have seen and what we have read and what we have talked about that there is going to be considerably more contemplated in this particular type of work. Thank you.
Thank you, Arnold. The next topic, what are possible objections to instructional television? Dr. Norman Gould.
Many of us feel somewhat threatened with this machine taking over our jobs, and perhaps rightly so. The committee has felt that it's very important to bring up some of the objections that have been taking place among faculty and teachers who feel the television is close to them or has already been originated in their particular areas. We have devised some of the objections here. Perhaps there are more. If there are, we can hear them later. One is, improved learning is not conclusively demonstrated through the use of television. In other words, do we really learn better through the use of television? Now, the use of instructional television has really not been in progress long enough to conclusively evaluate whether or not improved learning is demonstrated through the use of television. However, there have been many studies made thus far. Art Stobe has a whole list of these studies that are available to you. Just a few of them, perhaps, can be stated here. At Penn State, which has been measuring student attitudes and test results for 7 years regarding televisions, research has reported a gradual average change to a higher level of acceptance of television. In Oregon System of Higher Education, where researchers found considerable resistance by individual professors, faculty attitudes toward student learning were more favorable than unfavorable. In the Anaheim system, which you heard about a little while ago, only 9% of the teachers believe that the students learned less by television than by conventional teaching techniques. And all the principals were convinced that students learned more than through this television operation. There were none. As far as the teachers are concerned, I don't know the number that was undecided. I don't have that with me here. However, this is available. All things being equal, teaching competency and skills are more evident on TV, and conversely, teaching incompetency and ineptitude is also more evident on TV. Another objection to TV among those of us who are concerned with teaching over TV is that television is too impersonal. In spite of the lack of physical presence of the instructor, there may be greater value in TV instruction because in instructional television, the instructor is teaching into the camera. It was noted before that there is eye-to-eye contact. This can't be achieved through the conventional method, where we can only look at one student at a time. This does bring in a more personal type of atmosphere when the instructor can look at each student individually and, of course, at the same time. In TV instruction, it is possible to get close-ups of the instructor, whereby every student in the room, regardless of how large the class may be, has a front row seat, and that was also brought before in terms of image magnification. TV instruction permits more readily a time configuration whereby courses can be taught in a combination of TV lectures and small discussion sections. The small discussion sections definitely permit a very close interpersonal relationship between the instructor and the students. Another objection thought about is, what about feedback from television courses? You feel that in conventional courses it's very easy. You can ask questions of the instructor and he will answer you. You get some feedback there. Well, on the contrary, feedback can be achieved in several ways over television, some of which may be more effective than conventional classroom teaching. Small discussion sections, again, for example, are more conducive to offering feedbacks than large sections. There are two-way TV systems where the student can ask questions over the TV circuit. Testing in large classes can be accomplished quite efficiently by presenting the test questions on the TV monitors. This permits more uniform and smoother testing procedures. The instructor doesn't have to pass out papers and collect them and so forth and so on. Well, collect them, yes. They may have the machine doing that for us too, so. TV offers several advantages in the testing area which conventional teaching cannot achieve. A very common type of objection to TV is a business of, will there be stock courses available when TV gets into progress, where we can purchase courses and just present them over the TV monitor? What happens there? Well, we don't really know, but we find that the use of textbooks has not led to either a standard curriculum or a stock course in any subject area. Even where statewide textbook adaptations are made, such as in California, in the elementary schools, local districts often purchase many textbooks to use. The competition among publishers of books and possible TV tapes in exemplifying free enterprise should result in several excellent productions for any one subject. These could be adjuncts to your courses, such as audiovisual aids, if we do find a good television tape done by some prominent person. Rapidly changing subject matter in some subjects will require constant revisions of TV presentations, which in part can be accomplished through the free enterprise process of producing TV courses. Regular college instructors need to help plan and should always hear the TV lecture, possibly with the students, and conduct discussion, activity, or laboratory following the lecture. In any sizable college situation, it is feasible and probably necessary that expert TV presentations originate on the campus and be taught by regular college staff, where the uniqueness of the institutional program can be developed and presented throughout all its instruction. The need to recognize differences between the instructors is as important as recognizing differences among individuals. Another objection: TV makes stars out of people. This has been a comment. University of Texas, which is using TV quite commonly down there, has complained about this. Certain people think that just because an instructor is on TV, they make a star of him, becomes very popular among the students and faculty, and so, well, not among the faculty, but mostly among the students. And this is exactly the objection. He doesn't become very popular among the faculty because of this rise to stardom. All right. Superior teachers would be recognized in TV teaching as in conventional classroom teaching. A superior teacher is generally recognized in regards to what medium he has chosen to teach in. The show-off type of individual can be eliminated very quickly. There are methods of interviewing, of selecting people for this kind of program. Departments can do this by themselves. If a guy is really out there trying to shine, he can be called down without too much trouble. We don't think this is necessarily something that has to come about. Another and last objection, because time is up, there are more. It is felt that interest in televised presentations might drop off. Well, generally speaking, after something is brought in as a novelty, it does wear off. There could be definite drop-off in interest in TV presentations. However, serious students become more discriminating in recognizing skillful television presentations. Evidences of critical discernment and perceptive taste remain after the newness and novelty of televised presentations has been replaced by a different fad. So it isn't necessary. If the thing is good and students think that it has merit, it won't wear off. It will last, we feel.
Thank you very much, Norman. The next one: how are staffing and rights of instructors handled in the use of television? Mr. Dominic Perello.
Thank you, Dr. Schroeder. My feeling is, and I think I was at least one of the individuals on the committee that felt this was true, is that we're going to get TV whether we like it or not, and we're going to probably get it for the wrong reasons. And the main reason that I can see is money. For some reason, people feel that a TV operation is going to save substantial sums of money, particularly in courses that are repetitive. Take something like Math 7, or Economics 201, or Biology 110. Courses of this kind, which deal with large numbers of students and are repetitive in nature, the tendency is to feel that these courses can be taped and sort of solidly stacked away in the wall and used again on the TV machine. Well, this is an old operation. I'm sure the textbook ruined a good many lecture notes through the years, and in some cases the textbook became the lecture notes. So that the question here is, we have a new advancement in the form of presenting material and in dealing with the learning situation. It really is a question of how are we going to use this thing intelligently and beneficially. I think this is the heart of the matter. Now, for the teacher, I hope he doesn't turn out to be a Luddite who wants to throw a wrench in the machinery and ruin it. The real question is to recognize his economic and professional stake in this new medium, and also to have sense enough to protect himself and to enhance himself through its use. I'm going to talk about four problem areas, and I'm not going to even pretend that these are the only ones. But these four are the relationship between the teacher and the medium itself, the teacher and his profession, the teacher and his economic status, and the teacher and his political status. First of all, the medium. The classroom, very often, particularly where you are dealing simply with the students, is at times much more flexible than television. Television is an extreme taskmaster. I think in watching the Anaheim operation, this is one of the things we found. In presenting, say, a 12-minute program to the third grade, this program is usually rehearsed for 8 hours. Teacher prepares the lesson, goes through the rehearsal, makes up all the audiovisual aids, and has an artist to assist her, and so on. In presenting this thing then for 12 minutes, takes 8 hours of preparation. And it goes into every classroom. You're really dealing with, say, in the neighborhood of 1,000 students at one time, and the classroom teacher must also be prepared for the lesson. So in this case, it's much more exacting, both in preparation and in timing, because the TV program that's coming on next is going to go on next, whether you're through or not. And the net result is you must have this down to real perfection. In some cases, obviously, those of us who are ready to examine a question the student may have and put off till tomorrow part of our lecture for today or whatever it happens to be, this part is lost in this procedure. Another one is the comparative aspect, as I see it, and that is the student is at home busy watching Gunsmoke or Hitchcock, or if he's perceptive, Adlai Stevenson talking about the UN, and you're going to come to class and talk about economics or biology, and the first thing he's going to say is, this guy doesn't measure up to John Arnett. This is a problem, and I think it's one we have to recognize, is that our learning is an exciting process, and we're going to have to re-stimulate this part of it, and I think TV can help us and assist us greatly. And third, the thing that I think I've learned from being on a committee more important than anything I've ever seen before. Since coming to Cal Poly, I've found that teaching in those tin shacks we've distributed to the high school, the facilities are very important to learning. And that using the buildings we have now, which are extremely nice, has aided and abetted teaching. Once upon a time I looked down on this, I thought perhaps sitting on a log with a student was the best approach, but I'm positive now it is not. And in TV, I'm positive of another thing, and that is that truly professional assistant, direction, artwork, is extremely important to a good TV program. You cannot get away from this particular part. Now, from the professional status, the real questions become, who's going to teach on TV? Who and how will it be decided, and how will it be taught? The possible configurations that are available. Perhaps an hour on TV and 2 hours in discussion section, or an hour on TV, an hour in discussion, an hour in lab, some kind of operation. None of us on the committee feel that TV by itself is going to do the job, but requires some personal contact with a student. The decisions about who and how and how much and so on, I think, have to be not only left up to the departmental groupings or understandings among the people themselves, but that the individual is going to be on TV, or individuals, if it's a team approach, have to be volunteers. I don't think you can dredge somebody into this and say, you're going to be on TV, and that's the way it's going to be from now on. At the one of the junior colleges in the South, this was the case, and the uproar, it still hasn't quieted down. We wrote to them to find out something of their feelings, and we had half a dozen letters coming back asking, well, what horrible approach have you taken now? So that it's one of the things we just have to recognize, that democratic procedures within the departments and within all the faculty, as far as I'm concerned, are absolutely a must. We must recognize that we all have a stake in the courses that our students are going to take, whether it's from Jones or Smith or Perella. And I think this is going to be important for all the faculty to take an interest in this particular thing. Dr. Gould has already mentioned the prima donna aspect, and I think this is an important role too. that we recognize whatever configuration we take, all the teachers are important, just as all the students are important. And we're going to have to look at the TV teacher and the classroom teacher as both necessary and equally valuable people, so that we don't automatically promote everybody that's on TV, or that we say, he's on TV, let's put him down at the bottom of the list. Either way is bad, as far as I can see. So we're going to need full participation of the people, the departments, and a faculty senate, or whatever tool we're going to use to control the use of TV in the sense of what our students get and what the instructional staff does. And secondly, ample preparation. We're going to have time, money, and the kind of staff, the professional staff that's required for this type of operation. And if possible, it would seem to me that students should be involved in the preparation as well. Third is the economic problems that are involved. One is release time. Obviously, if you're going to teach a one-hour course every 3 days, it's a real question of how much time can you prepare for this exacting medium. The other one is team teaching. We're going to have to get together a lot more than we have in the past and organize our courses and organize our whole unit of study much better than we have. I think the problems of using tapes are going to bring up the copyright problems that textbooks have. And then finally, the selection of teachers is going to be extremely important. Obviously, by retape, we may actually cut down the number of teaching jobs throughout the state. And finally, the high cost of keeping up. This means that you and I, myself, for instance, having been away from graduate school for 10 years, it just simply means we're not going to be able to do this anymore. In South Carolina, the procedure is now every fourth year, the teacher is going to go back to the school on a sabbatical to bring her TV show up to the very most important and new processes occurring in the field. And finally, since I only have a minute, is the political controversy that can evolve from TV. One, you're available to most people, and this means that controversial subjects are always going to be subject to question. And the good old conformist is going to be there who says, you said X and I learned B, and we're going to have problems of this kind. Secondly, standardization and centralization. These are going to be problems which we're going to have to face up. And finally, we have the self-censorship that grows out of the extremist position. You may want to say, well, Marx said this, and you think, well, if this is taken out of context, the next thing I know, I'll be in jail. And the net result is you will censor it out of your own material, and this, of course, is extremely bad. As far as I'm concerned, leads to blandness and conformity of viewpoint, which is the opposite of learning. And finally, if I can just add these 2 points. One, obviously, we're going to have an integrated approach. The faculties are going to have to pull together and have a good look at what they want to do with this. And two, we're going to have the responsible elements in our community and our state stick with us and know what we're doing and back us up in this approach.
Thank you, Dominic. And the last one, what are some possible developments in instructional television? Art Stobie.
Thank you, Dr. Schroeder. In 1960, the Institute of Communications Research at Stanford University was commissioned by the U.S. Office of Education to examine the potential future uses of instructional and educational television. Since the traditional methods of education had become increasingly inadequate to meet the stresses and strains of the times, school officials throughout the nation believe that 10 years hence, television will carry some part of the teaching of the great majority of school children in the nation.